Alan wanted to start off talking about some of the non-tax related issues provisions of the CARES Act, just in case they're of interest. We're not going to spend a lot of time on them or talking in general before we start opening up for questions. So, Alan, please go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I do want to let you know that after reading the 335 pages, it is quite interesting to see how many zeros can be put into something. But with that said, a lot of the things that I did read come out of that, other than the tax-related issues, which we'll spend most of our time talking about, I came across these items that I thought would be interesting to all of us. Number one is there is a no-cost, out-of-pocket testing for COVID-19. Right now, based on the limited amount of tests, obviously we're hearing this in the news, hopefully none of you have to be tested, but if you do need to be tested, there is no out-of-pocket. Once the vaccine is available, that will also be offered at no cost out of pocket. That'll be all covered under this bill. We have SBA loans. SBA loans, please go on mute. If you're just joining us now, we request that all of you stay on mute and ask questions through the chat bubble, which you'll find at the bottom of your screen. And then you just simply ask questions that way, which we will address as we go. The SBA loans are available, and these loans, there's a couple of different types of loans out there. Immediate need loans and loans are specifically designed to help out hospitality industries as well as other small businesses if the loans are being used for payroll purposes to keep employees paid during a downtime, rent or mortgage interest and or utilities. These loans potentially can be forgiven at a later date, and they will be forgiven without any issue from the recognition of income from the cancellation of that debt. There's also grants for small businesses available, and right now, considering small businesses considered under 25 million of gross receipts and or less than 500 employees. There is expanded unemployment. Unemployment will be expanded at up to with a federal $600 bonus in California that can be just over $1,000 a week. This is also going to be offered to self-employed individuals and gig economy workers that are not working. Unfortunately, at this time, the EDD, Employment Development Department, website does not show a way for self-employed people to do this. They're working on it as fast as they can, but hopefully we will see something shortly that will come up. This will be good for up to 39 weeks of unemployment for the self-employed. Medicare Part D drugs can get up to a 3-month supply or 90-day supply versus the normal 30-day supply, trying to keep that out. And if you have a government-backed student loan, there are no payments until 9/30/2020. There is no additional interest that will accrue. And also, if you have a situation where you currently are in a wage garnishment over non-payment of the student loans, those are supposed to stop as well. Now, for those of you that are landlords, I do want to let you know that if you have a federally backed mortgage, a conventional mortgage through Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae type of mortgage, you cannot evict your tenant for not paying for 120 days of the enactment of the bill, which was the 27th of March. So I am encouraging my clients that have tenants to be proactive, contact your tenants and let them know that, and see if they're obviously, you want to see if they're working, if they're going to have a problem that you need to know now so that you can plan accordingly. Today being April 1st, maybe is when you're going to find out that there is no unemployment to be available or not of some point, no, sorry, that rents may not be coming in. You want to know that going ahead. Also, there is no crediting if you miss one mortgage payment because of the coronavirus. They cannot ding your credit. Now, if you're going to be missing more than one mortgage, and even if you're going to miss one mortgage payment, I strongly encourage you to contact your lender and requesting a forbearance, the lender that prevents the lender from assessing any penalties or accruing any fees. The lender also cannot foreclose once they've given you the forbearance. Now, this only works if you're missing payments after the enactment of this bill. It has nothing to do if you're already behind in your mortgage. This is not going to be I don't believe this is going to help you. Now, I am saying all of this based on my limited knowledge of things outside of tax, but I felt these items were important that we needed to get across. And hopefully we'll be able to answer any questions going forward. Russell?
Right. So, like Alan touched on, you know, of course we are tax people. I like to tell my clients I'm not good at anything else besides tax. So some of these things, like Alan was talking about, don't directly touch taxes, and we may have read some about it, but we're probably not going to know a whole lot. And also, especially with regard to the unemployment insurance, and especially with regard to the unemployment insurance for self-employed people, as Alan mentioned, we're still waiting for the state EDD to give us information about that. They're probably still trying to figure it out themselves. So the other thing is the SBA loans. It's a very common question we're getting right now. We that's not our area of expertise. We can perhaps give you some general guidance privately, but we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about those today, just during this recording. So,
okay, Russell, a question came up, and I just wanted to address it right now because we're going to spend the rest of this time trying to address just the tax-related questions as we can. And the question is, can skipping a mortgage payment affect your credit score? If you miss one mortgage payment at this point, assuming it is let's say April going forward, because you're unemployed or underemployed, contact your lender. They are not supposed to do anything to your credit score, but I will not guarantee anything at this time because these things still are through the process. So I'll be encouraging everybody to communicate with their lenders.
So I'm sure almost everybody attending has been bombarded from all sides with news articles, radio, people talking, family questions, everywhere you look about these advanced recovery rebates. And because of that, I'm not planning to spend a lot of time going over it. Although, of course, if you have a question about it, you know, my goal is for this part, this is going to stay up for a while and allow everyone to kind of just see what's available, because I just kind of give you an idea of the scope of this bill. It was over 800 pages long, the CARES Act plus the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. I'm actually not sure how long that was. I'm sure it was another couple hundred pages, right? There's a lot of different things packed in here that the government's trying like crazy to keep people solvent as much as possible during the work slowdowns and shutdowns. So again, there's a lot of stuff on here. A lot of it may not apply to you individually. And so we're not going to spend a lot of time. And what we wanted to do at this town hall meeting was allow as much time as possible to answer questions, specific questions that you may have about any part of this, because I don't know, Alan and I have watched many, many different webinars in the last several days about this topic, and it gets very technical and it's easy to get sidetracked and going down a rabbit hole. What we'd like to do is be able to spend as much time as possible dealing with the specific questions that the attendees brought. So, and again, as we talked, there's some people who joined us after we started, so I want to just repeat that we're going to keep everybody on mute because there's over 100 people in attendance right now, and we want to make sure that everybody can hear us when we're talking. So we're going to ask that you put your questions in the chat box. Alan and myself and our staff are looking at those, and we'll try and make sure that we get to your questions. We're going to generally order them, answer them in the order received. So, and then once again, we are recording this, so we suggest that you not participate via video just for privacy reasons, because it may show up on the recording later. So, all right. So, again, it's going to go through real quick. We have the advanced recovery rebates. Most people will get $1,200. If their income was less than $75,000 last year, their adjusted gross income, on their most recently filed return, if it's 2018 or 19, right? They're going to look to 19 for your adjusted gross income. If you haven't filed 2019 yet, which many people have not, since it's not actually due until July 15th now, then they'll look to the 2018 return for guidance. So, and then for a joint couple, it's $150,000. Once you get above that level of income, there's a phase out 5% of the amount over that threshold. So an individual filer will phase out at about $99,000 of income, and the married couple will be at about $198,000. There's additional $500 per child or dependent under the age of 17 that's on your return that they're looking at. So, but this is an advance credit. It is going to be on your 2020 return. You will true up, but not true down, if that makes sense. I know that's not really a word, but it kind of makes things easy to understand for a lot of people. Where so what it means is that when you go to file your 2020 return, they'll calculate the credit that you're actually entitled to based on your 2020 adjusted gross income. If the amount that you're eligible for is more than what you got in advance, then you'll get the difference on your return. If it turns out that you are qualified for less than what they sent you in advance, you do not need to pay it back. So when I say it trues up, not trues down, that's what I mean. So it's only a one way. It'll only benefit you, not harm you. So Alan touched on expanded unemployment insurance. That's still being put in place. I believe the extra $600 a week started today. So I'm starting this week in April, I believe, and it goes through July 31st, I believe. So if you have an unemployment claim, you'll get what you would normally get based on your earnings, and then you'll get an additional $600 per week. So one thing I'll just touch on, because we're a tax guy, unemployment insurance payments are taxable. And I know that if you're not working right now, that's probably not what your first concern is. But we do want to just make sure that you're aware that you will get a 1099-G from the EDD or whatever state department you're calling in for, or you're collecting from, that will list those payments, and you will have to pay tax on them in 2020. So,
Federal tax.
Yes, sir. California or the states do not tax it. So, the FFCRA, or the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, did mandate that employers who have 500 employees or fewer are required to provide 2 weeks of paid sick or family leave related to the coronavirus pandemic, whether that be for you are sick or you are being advised by a doctor to be self-quarantine. It's unclear yet whether the state mandated shelter in place for those of you in California or the Bay Area specifically, you know, we're under that order for the last couple of weeks. It's unclear whether that qualifies or not, but I believe it will. So, but the employers are supposed to pay for up to 2 weeks of time through between now and the end of the year if it's related to the coronavirus. And the government will generally be reimbursing them for those wages while you're off. So if you're not getting that now, please talk to your employer and see if you can get that going. So. For those of you who have that are over 70 or now 72, if you have required minimum distributions, there is no required minimum distribution for 2020. That also actually applies to inherited IRAs. So if you would normally be required to take money out, you still can, assuming you're entitled to it, but you're not required to for this year. So I'm sure most of the people here have been already heard from Alan and myself with our multiple emails talking about that. And of course, the tax return due date has been pushed out to July 15th, as well as the due date for payments. So, and that also includes your HSA, IRA, Solo 401k, et cetera. Contribution deadlines are also now July 15th. That is kind of evolved over the last week or so. The IRS didn't initially give us guidance and everything. And so what Alan mentioned in the beginning is that this is still evolving at some point. So, if you are in an installment agreement with the IRS, you can stop or suspend the payments until July 15th without defaulting your agreement. You can potentially withdraw up to $100,000 from your retirement account, pre-tax retirement account, without an early withdrawal penalty if you are impacted financially by the coronavirus. And I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work yet, because you can both either elect to reap to spread the tax of that withdrawal over the next 3 years, 2021 and 2020, 2021 and 22, Or within that 3-year period, you can elect to put any amount of the money back and not pay tax on it at all. So I'm not sure how they're going to manage where if you start to pay the tax on it and then later put money back in and it ends up not taxable, they're going to have to figure that out. So, and then if you have an employer-sponsored retirement account like a 401k, normally the most you can borrow from it is the lesser of $50,000 or half of the balance in the account. That's now been increased to $100,000. But I believe that the administrator of the plan is going to have to go along with that. So on the other side, you have a bunch of stuff that applies to the employer side of things. You know, we have the expanded unemployment insurance for individuals. And on this side is all the stuff the U.S. government is trying to do to make people not have to file for unemployment. They're trying to keep people being paid like they're accustomed to their normal jobs to try and minimize the amount of disruption that's going on. So there's a lot of different things. They're quite technical. If you are an employer or if you work for an employer that may need this information, please reach out to Alan or I to evaluate what the options are. So I'm going to start looking through some of we're going to start going through the questions that are in the chat box now. So the first one okay. I see is
Russell.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I think it'll be easier if I just kind of ask questions that I see, sure. And then we can just bounce them back and forth a little bit. But I wanted to start just a couple of things. First of all, one of the attendees was nice enough to put a link up for the uschamber.com's small business guide for the coronavirus. For those small businesses out there, you may want to look into this. There's been a few questions about unemployment, and I'm going to address them in a very broad scale so that we can, because again, this is beyond our expertise. I'm going strictly by my understanding. If your salary has decreased, because I've been seeing a lot of companies trying to salvage employees but cutting their salary by 40% or more, or cutting them in half, I believe that the state will still be available monies from the state. That is something that the EDD is going to have to answer for us, and hopefully they will have those answers shortly. Beyond that, I really do not know whether or not, you know, I can't give you an answer because these are still unknown to us. The feds are subsidizing this unemployment. That extra money may or may not be available for underemployed versus unemployed people. When Congress puts a bill together, especially a bill of this nature together, they're putting this off into a number of different departments for them to handle the particulars within this bill. So the IRS has been very good about getting things out right away for us. I've been getting emails, and Russell gets these emails as well on a regular basis that gives us the next thing that the IRS is coming out with, but it does take a little bit of time. So I just want you to be aware that this could potentially take a little time before we get this.
Advice for unemployment would be, if you think you might qualify for it, apply, and they'll tell you how much you qualify for. So
that's probably the best way to go.
I'm sure that anyone that works for the EDD will not thank me for saying that, but that's just going to be my general. Trying to call them is going to be a fool's errand at this time, unfortunately. Just put in a claim if you can, and when they go to evaluate, you know, your claim, they'll tell you whether you qualify for how much. So, but whatever that normal benefit might be, you do get the additional money from the CARES Act. So, and the other thing, I don't know the details yet, but self-employed people for the first time may qualify for unemployment. And also they're saying people that may not normally qualify due to lack of a work history or recent work history may qualify for unemployment. But again, we're waiting on the state unemployment department to come out with the details of that, and we don't have them at this time. So.
And unemployment, California unemployment is requesting you do as much online as possible, mainly because that is what they have best available to handle. Now, I'm going to go through these questions. The first question came out that was good. Russell, is the recovery rebate taxable?
Nope.
That's really a credit, folks, and you may qualify for it this year, even if you do not receive the advance payment, which is a really nice little feature. Next question is, do we have to actively pause student loan payments or will they automatically stop? This is another question that I simply cannot give you a definite answer. If you need to stop the payments because you're in a situation where it just does not work for you, I encourage you to contact a lender directly, and that will help you avoid getting any threatening letters in between. This is only for the government-backed student loans. So if you have a private student loan, that I do not believe is going to be covered, the way I'm reading this.
And I don't know the answer to that either, unfortunately. So.
Right. And again, the independent contractor worker getting unemployment, I'm going to just try to address this as one last comment on unemployment, hopefully, because of the fact that this is really outside of our realm. Unemployment generally works from my understanding that if you work part-time, you get part unemployment. If you work full-time, you get no unemployment. So if you get an occasional job, you're required to let unemployment know on a regular basis how much you've worked, how much you've earned, and they calculate it accordingly. That's the way I understand it works. Beyond that, I can't give you any more answers.
That's the normal rules, not the new ones. So, and the new ones, we don't even know yet. So again, you're going to have to keep an eye out for the EDD, perhaps file a claim proactively, and then when they come to contact you and ask about your earning history, you can always try and hopefully by then they'll have figured this out yet, because right now we simply don't know.
And one last question that came up based on what I was talking about earlier, and that is if a tenant does not pay you rent, and again, I'm just only bringing this up because I was trying to help my clients that do have rental properties be proactive. If you do not have a mortgage, or if you have a non-conventional mortgage, the rule was specifically written the way I read it, the way I understood it, was only if you have a conventional mortgage. With that said, many cities, and I believe in California, the governor announced that you cannot evict a tenant for not paying rent in this time. So I'm encouraging you all to check before you
Residential cannot be evicted.
So all residential. Commercial, yeah. A whole different ballgame. So again, in these situations, I encourage you to communicate with your tenants, and this way you can prevent a lot of this. This is not a rent-free situation. They are required to pay it at some time. That is something I do want to let you know. Now, back to my questions, Russell, because when you did that, I moved. Give me a second.
There was a question about whether we think that the rebate activity will delay the IRS refund payments for 2019. I haven't seen anything that suggests that that's going to be the case. We hope that it won't be. Especially for e-filed returns, those are fairly automated, I believe. E-filed returns with direct deposit, especially, I believe that should go forward without delay. That's my expectation, but I actually haven't seen anything either way.
I can't imagine it being any different than that, because the whole goal right now is for the Treasury to get as much money in our pocket as possible to keep the economy going. And that's what this is all about. Now, the next question we see here, when are estate taxes due?
So I believe most states, if not all states, have followed suit with the IRS and have extended the due date for 2019 payments to July 15th. Sorry, I know California does. That's where most of our clients are. That's where Alan and I are. They have moved state due date also to July 15th without payment. I'm sorry, without interest or penalties. So the IRS has also and California both have moved their first quarterly estimated tax payment for 2020 out to July 15th. Just because we can't have anything be remotely simple, the IRS did not move the second quarter due date, which is remains June 15th, but California did. So for California, the 2019 taxes, as well as the first and second quarter, the estimated payments for 2020, if you make them, are all due on July 15th.
Okay, and that brings up another comment that I'd like to bring in here, Russell, and that is prior to us having these issues with the lockdown and or not lockdown, but the shelter in place and everything else going on, we have prepared tax returns that had balances due. Russell, if we had a balance due and the taxpayer elected to have that balance due automatically paid on the due date, which both of us use the same software where we have the ability to set that up for our clients, that payment is going to happen on April 15th.
Unless it's canceled. And there are ways it's an automated system for that you can use to dial in and cancel it. If you need help with that, let Alan or I know, please. And there's, of course, nothing wrong. The government will never, ever say no to money early. They'll only say no to money late. So if you have the money already scheduled to come out on April 15th and you would just as soon get it over with and not delay it, then you don't need to do anything. If it's already scheduled for April 15th and you'd rather wait till July 15th, then you're going to need to call and cancel that and then re-request the payment at a later date. So.
Next question. If we already started contributing to HSAs or our IRAs for 2020, can we put amounts towards 19 if we didn't max them out in 19?
Yes.
And what is the due date to do that then?
July 15th. July 15th. You're going to contact your account custodian, whether it be HSA, IRA, or whatever, and they're going to have a process in place because you can usually, you know, under normal rules, contribute up to April 15th anyways, right? So they all have a process in place that'll let you designate a current year contribution as being made for a prior year.
Okay, the next question that comes in, Russell, when is the last date that we can withdraw the $100,000, I'm assuming, from our IRAs, or is this a permanent thing?
I believe it's through July 31st. I'm sorry, December 31st, 2020. You can make that that distribution. So there are criteria that it lists. There's like six different ways you can qualify as a person impacted by the coronavirus that would allow you to take this $100,000. If you are going to take out any amount of money, especially something quite that large, we encourage you to ask Alan or I as appropriate to make sure that you're going to get the treatment that you're expecting. So.
Okay. No, I believe they've already addressed the state taxes are due on July 15th, as is the federal. This is a kind of an off-topic comment / question about the SBA loans. The SBA loans we're being told they're going to be handled by our local banks. They're also being told they're going to be handled by online. Right now, as I mentioned earlier, when the bill was written, it was parsed off into all different areas. And each one of these areas, be the SBA, the IRS, and the different state agencies that are taking care of this, it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get their things together. I do know that if you Google SBA loans or SBA, it just pops up automatically. Different things are popping up right and left. So it shouldn't be too difficult. Ideally, we'll have that information shortly, but at this point of the game, it's just a matter of time before everybody gets their act, understands what they're doing, so they get the stuff out there correctly. Okay,
just a quick point of clarification. There's two different loan programs from the CARES Act. The Economic Injury Disaster Loan, right? The EIDL, that is actually a loan directly from the SBA. They do that to make it quick. The other one, the Paycheck Protection Program loan is through your local bank. It's what they call a 7A loan. So you're going to work with an existing approved SBA lending bank to do that, I think, starting Friday. So.
And also on that note, just as we're talking about these, what I was reading the bill is that these loans are going to be they're not going to require any personal guarantees. They're not going to require any collateral. These loans and the max interest rate could be 4%.
EIDL will require personal guarantee above $200,000, but will not require collateral, is my understanding. But hey, we're tax people, not lending
right.
people.
So let's move on back to tax questions, sure. And we'll go from there. For the $100,000 withdrawal from a 401k, as an example, does the 3-year taxable distribution occur starting from 3 years from now or from year one? And Russell, I'm going to let you add to this, but this is going back to what we had a few years back.
Sure.
This is a lot of what we're modeling, a lot of what is going on here, and why the IRS is able to be able to pull this off a little bit faster than the last time was because they're basing a lot of this on the 08 stimulus. Mm-hmm. So, Russ, I'll let you go from there.
So back in 08, there was an option to take a 401k distribution or a Roth conversion even, and pay half the tax in that year, basically recognize pay tax on half of the income in the first year and half in the second. I have every expectation it's going to work the same way, except for now it's going to be divided over 3 years instead of two. I expect that if you take out $100,000, you're going to pay $33,000. You're going to recognize $33,000 in year one, $33,000 in year two, and then 30 or whatever, and a third in the third year. So it's what I would expect. But I don't think we've heard anything official either way. So.
Okay. The next question is, do you have to pay back the $100K withdrawn from your IRA? And the answer is basically no, but you will be taxed on it over the period.
You have 3 years to put the money back in and treat it as if it's an indirect rollover, where it would be like you never took it out for tax purposes. But again, I literally have no idea how they're going to reconcile those two things, because in theory, you could be required to pay tax on 2/3 of it, and in year three, get a huge bonus or make a good sale or whatever, and pay it all back in year three, and it'll be as if the distribution never happened for tax purposes. I don't know how they're going to administer that. So,
okay, and I think we already addressed this next question. The tax returns are due on the April 15th due date for all tax returns that are due April 15th are now extended to 7/15. And I say that with the caveat that fiscal year returns that are extended that are due on April 15th are still due on April 15th. So a corporation with a fiscal year that ended that created a return that's due on April 15th does not get extended.
I believe they are actually. Did we see that yesterday?
I didn't see that yesterday.
The IRS came out with a thing saying, oh, you know what, we're just going to give it to you. So, but anyways, okay. If you have a question about it, check with us.
I'll look into that a little deeper because I didn't see that one. Yeah. Thanks.
Tony was talking about that yesterday. So,
okay. Now, again, we're going back to a couple of questions that are coming up about small landlords, especially some of our retired clients, that this is their main source of income. If not, their only other than Social Security, their only source of income. And will they be eligible for any of these SBA loans or unemployment? And I do not want to say yes or no for sure. I would encourage.
Well, unemployment is based on earned income, and landlord income is not earned income, so you're not going to get that.
That's not going to
PPP
work.
Is Paycheck Protection Program. It's based on the maximum you can borrow under the PPP is 2.5 times your average monthly payroll over the last 12 months. If that's zero, you get zero. EDIL, yes. You will qualify for the EDIL. If you go to the application, you'll see that there's a place they're asking about lost rent. So that would be the one you'd look into. So,
okay, this next question, I read the same article. It was in the Washington Post. Then it says, does Social Security won't get checks? If you're collecting Social Security, you won't get a check. That is incorrect. What is going on right now is
the
IRS
got confused.
Yes. It was, again, this is all trying to get the money out as fast as they possibly can. And that's the whole goal. If you did not file a tax return for 18 or 19 because your income is limited and it's only Social Security, initially the Treasury said that they will figure out a way to make those checks happen. Now the IRS is potentially saying that there may be a short form that we need to file. They are also going to be setting up a portal for those that do not have direct deposit already set up with the IRS that we can get into that portal so that you can fill out enough information to give the IRS the ability to send you that check directly.
Details TBA. So
yes, this is
so. What actually happened is the CARES Act actually specifically says that you don't need to file. That if your only income is from Social Security and you don't have a filing requirement, that they would look at your 1099 from the Social Security Administration and send out the check based on that. Then yesterday, the day before, the IRS came out with a guidance that said, no, you got to file something, but that's literally not what the law says. So a couple of our colleagues have been talking with their federal representatives, and they're like, no, that's not what the law says. Let's go talk to the IRS. So we expect that. I fully expect that to be retracted. So there's a lot of confusion in the meantime. Everybody's writing because everyone needs something to write about in the journalism, right? And they're saying, oh, no, you got to file a simple return, but that's simply not true. And that's not, there's the law is a higher authority than what the IRS guidance says, and they're going to have to issue a new guidance. So.
Okay, great. Next question. How would you suggest calculating estimated federal tax payment amount for Q2 of 2020? And that does not change. The estimated payments are still going to be based on 90% of your current tax liabilities. So if you are not working, if you are not earning money because you're self-employed and you're shut down for whatever reason, you do not have to make an estimated payment. That simple.
Yeah, no money, no income, or no profit. Then yeah. So the one thing I'll mention is that the default that many of us use, including the tax pros, is to base your estimated payments based on your prior year tax return, because that's how we can guarantee that you won't be subject to underpayment penalty if you end up owing more, right? But that's not the only way to do it, and you can base it on how much money you're actually earning. And in this quarter, I'm guessing a lot of people's income is going to be down compared to this time last year. So if you need help calculating that, let us know, but you have until June 15th. So we'll figure that out.
Okay. pardon me. We kind of addressed this already, but I want to make sure that we're clear. Will Social Security recipients receive a stimulus check also? And the answer is it depends. If Social Security is your only income, then yes, you will most likely receive it. If Social Security is part of your income, but yet you're over the limits of that Russell described earlier, the $75,000 per individual phased out, then you're not going to get that, although you may be eligible to receive something in the 2020 filing, because this is technically a tax credit.
Yeah. And then that's a better answer than I would have given, because I would just get, yeah, we just talked about that, but I forgot about the point. Yes, it's not actually specifying that that's their only income, so good catch. So.
Yeah, no problem. SBA loans are going to start happening this Friday, just announced. Okay, great. Call your
That's
bank.
The PPP. Yeah.
Yes, thanks for the information. For our clients that owe more than $1 million from 19 activity, is that payment? Okay, this is actually coming in for me for another preparer, but that's okay. It's a welcome smile for me. Is that payment date now moved to back to July as well? I know it was previously mentioned that it would be due on April 15th, but I haven't seen any updates to that. My understanding is that, yes, you can still postpone that payment till July 15th.
So what happened is that right after the Secretary Mnuchin went on TV and said, hey, we're going to push everything back to July 15th, the IRS issued a preliminary guidance that said only up to $1 million would be postponed. And that's why there's this confusion, I think. However, they subsequently issued another notice. So that one was number 17. This one's number 18. And 18 says, forget 17. This supersedes it and there's no limit. So there is going to be some confusion about that if you didn't see that there was a superseding notice that came out. But there is no $1 million limit like there was in the initial guidance. So.
And also with the same, this holds true for corporations.
So I see a question that's privately being asked if I stopped sharing my screen. I did. If you scroll to the top of the chat box, there's a link to the Dropbox document that I was sharing. I can always put it back up if enough people want to see it. But the idea was that you'd be able to look at it on your own screen without having to stare at mine. So.
Okay. Now, another question. Tax returns that are due on May 15th, are they also extended? These are generally nonprofits. No. They're still due May 15th at this time. That's what I'm understanding as well.
They're very specifically only extended returns that were due on April 15th. So, right. So if you have a fiscal year, June fiscal year end nonprofit that went on extension and another extension, it's still due on May 15th.
For clarification, 401k withdrawal, is this limited to early withdrawals, or does it also apply to those 65 or over? We generally do on our slide, it talks about the penalties and interest. This is a good question.
That's a good question.
Because if you're taking, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that if you're below the required minimum distribution age, then you should be able to withdraw and pay back and pay it over that time frame. But I'm not 100% sure on that. If you're at
the required minimum, there's no RMD requirement this year.
Right. That's the other thing is that if you are a required minimum distribution, you do not have to take one this year. Right now is a buying opportunity, folks. Think about it like that. I understand. I think I know where this question is going. I've got my money in the stock market, and I see the stock market having its roller coaster days. We don't lose unless we sell. So let's keep that thought in mind. And I would encourage you to, we'll have to keep an eye on that one to go back and see if this thing changes at a later date.
But at this point, you reach out to one of us before you actually do that. My best guess would be that the $100,000 deferment or repayment would still qualify if you qualify as a impacted person, right? So.
Okay, Russell, if you wouldn't mind, if you could post that Dropbox link again for people that join late, they may not be able to go up high enough on their chat to see it.
No problem. That would be great.
Now, I have another question here. This is great. These questions are keeping coming in. We have the time that we need. I don't think that Russell's tired of talking yet. Obviously, I never am tired of talking. So feel free to keep asking questions. But the next one that just came in is, can you please explain again the 80-hour sick time for employees as you understand it? I'll let that one to Russell.
Okay. So... yeah, that's it's complicated. So what the FFCRA says, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act says, is that employers of 500 or fewer have to provide up to 80 hours of paid sick or family leave time, and because this is through between now and the end of the year, right? And because this is a mandate from the federal government is giving the employers a way that they are, can make the government pay for that sick time. So so if you are unemployed, that becomes complicated, right? And what is still up in the air is how these are all going to interplay, because as we saw on the document that we shared, you know, the government has created a whole lot of different ways for to incentivize employers to continue paying their employees, even if there's no work, right? Before this happens, you know, there's, well, what's the, like there's all of these different things, you know, about refundable payroll credit, right? Delaying federal tax deposits. They're saying, you know, employee retention credit and all of these SBA loans, right? So the question becomes, you know, what happens if you furloughed your employees and or got furloughed yourself, and then later on the government reimburses your employer to keep you paid during that time, and they decide, okay, we're going to go back and pay you, right? Well, what happens to the unemployment? I'm guessing you're probably going to have to pay that back, but I'm not entirely sure. So we need to keep that in mind. I did repost the link to Dropbox in the chat. If you missed it up top, I apologize for that, but you should be able to access it now. And what I just shared was page one of that. It just kind of gives an overview, right? And so what we talked about in the beginning was, you know, we're talking very generally, right? In order to both make the information we're giving as useful as possible to the greatest number of people, but also to protect your confidentiality about your unique circumstances. So Alan, I'll be happy to talk to you offline, make an appointment to discuss questions as they pertain to you, so.
What penalty if you simply don't pay estimated tax?
Same as always.
Go on.
Yeah, same as always. It's 0.5% per month of the difference between what your required payment was, which is in short is the smaller number of 100% of your current your prior year tax, or 110% if your income is over $150,000, or 90% of the current year tax. So that's not changing. So
that answer, you know, but again, if you're not making money, you don't. Pardon me. There's no requirement to make an estimated payment. We've kind of addressed this in the past, and so don't see another question popping up right now, waiting for others to come in. I want to recircle back to our clients that have rental properties as their main source of income. If they not collecting rents and you are not able to pay your bills, unfortunately, that is going to be on you. There is a potential of small SBA loans available, but there is nothing for unemployment because, again, you have to be employed for that, and tenants or landlords are not considered employees. The best thing to do would be to be proactive, contact your tenants, see what you can do to work something out with them so that you can potentially get this money flowing quicker than later. You have commercial leases. You always have legal recourse in those situations, I would imagine, depending on how your lease is written. But individuals, you know, for if you are talking about strictly residential rentals that you're dealing in, then residential rentals are going that, whether or not the tenant pays you and your right to evict that tenant, whether it is, there's some of it is built into the CARES Act, but a lot of it is built into state and city and county law. I'm seeing more and more stuff talking about groups of, you know, renters or associations that want furloughs from rent that don't want to have to pay it. I don't think that is fair to the landlord. I think that the way of the world, the way I'm reading the CARES Act, is that a tenant is responsible to pay it. They just can get a little time to pay it if they need that time.
I think that most people, you know, based on the ones I've talked to, and I don't know about Alan, it's like, you know, if you reach out to your tenants, commercial or residential, and try and work something out proactively, you're more likely to collect something, right? Because I think there's a lot that will say, I can't afford to pay the whole thing, so I'm not going to send you anything, right? Or they don't know what leeway they're going to be able to get. So if you reach out and you're reasonable in what you, as much as you can be, given your financial situation, be reasonable about the timeline of when you expect the back rent to be paid, I think you could probably collect something from most of your tenants, even if it's not the full amount. So.
And also, because of all this talk that's out there and a lot of the stuff that we're seeing through the media stating that you don't have to pay rent, that's all the more reason for you to be on top of it with your clients.
Exactly.
If you know your clients work in fields or are working and they simply don't think they have to pay you, that is not the way that's not the way the law is written.
Sure.
So this way, by talking to them and finding out where they are financially, where they are in their lives right now, and being on top of that, that can definitely help you help them pay you. Because even if you work it out that you pay me 50% now, and then 50% in 4 months when you go back to work for this month, and we do that for the next few months, it's going to be tough for a lot of these people to catch up. So it's important for you, because I can tell you in California, under California law, for those of you that are landlords in California, you know it is not easy to evict anybody. And now you're dealing with this extra burden. So I would encourage you, again, the more you stay on top of this, the better off you are. We do have another question here. And we already addressed this, but we're going to say it real quick again. Yes, under the current rules, Q1 estimated payments are due on July 15th. Q2 estimated payment is due June 15th.
Federally.
For the federal purposes. California says you can make them both on July 15th, but for federal purposes, they haven't got their head around this yet.
There was some talk about putting that into the CARES Act that was also delayed, but for whatever reason, it got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Another one, but if the rent will be due after the leeway period, isn't it? Yes.
Yes.
The rent
will nobody's getting a free ride. They're just getting a deferment, and you can't evict them all for 120 days after March 27th. But, you know, they still need to work out and figure out, you know, how to pay you what's due. The amount of rent that's due does not change. It's just you can't evict them for not paying it for the next 120 days. So, yes, again, proactive landlords are going to do better because they're going to let their tenants know what's expected of them and make sure that they know that they still have to pay the rent, even no matter what they think they're hearing in the news, right? And also that the landlord will know when to expect things and won't, you know, jump the gun a little bit on day 121. So.
Right. Now, there's a question here that I really can't answer, but I will give you a nutshell. And what is the timeline for receiving funds after filing for SBA loans? As fast as they can pump the money out. The whole thing here
is faster they can print it, really. So, yes. But so there's what I'm seeing is that the EIDL or EDIL, I don't remember which way it goes, but the one that's directly with the SBA, they're saying when you apply, they're asking, do you want to request $10,000 in advance while we consider your application? And they say that happens within 3 days of submission of a successful application. When you're applying, you give them your bank account information. You tell them where to put the money. That is considered a grant. There's, I think, $450 billion. No, $100 billion. $100 billion, I think, has been earmarked for this specific grant. That does not need to be repaid, even if you do not get a loan. So that happens very quickly, and they're trying to pump these emergency loans out fairly quickly. Once you get to the 7A, the PPP loans, then you're dealing with the bank, and I'm sure you know, and if anyone's ever applied for an SBA loan, you know how that goes. They're trying to streamline things as much as possible, but it's really going to be dependent on the practices and the workload and the bottlenecks that are inherent in working with the bank lending department. So,
okay, I've got another question on unemployment. And again, all I can do is try to give you my best understanding. As a self-employed owner of a company, you have been forced to lay off your employees and yourself to start collecting unemployment. is answering your phone and giving free estimates over, as an owner, as grounds for disqualifying you as part of employment. This is a question that I really would encourage you to talk to an employment about and get, and make sure that you understand, because a lot of us that have been self-employed for many, many years, or a lot of us have never collected unemployment, so we really don't know these rules. These are not tax laws. These are really dealing with the unemployment rules. And unfortunately, when I went onto the EDD website yesterday, it clearly said if you're self-employed, you cannot collect unemployment. They've got a whole page of reasons why and laws. And
so they haven't been updated yet. Yeah.
So it's just going to be a little bit of time for us to feel this all out. Now, this is a good question. And I don't think anybody's going to like the answer to it. And what about property taxes in California? Do we still need to pay in full by 410 in 2020? Well, I could tell you that right now there has been no reprieve in property taxes. And
when I saw that question, I went to the Santa Clara County where I am, property tax assessor, and they have a thing up top saying, we're reminding you that it's still delinquent after April 10th. So it is going to be probably on a county by county basis, but at least my county is not giving any use. Because they're saying, hey, this is actually due on February 1st. It's only late after April 10th. So at least this local county in my area has not given any reprieve.
Well, I can tell you in Contra Costa County, I received four emails from the county last week reminding me that my property taxes are due. So
you paid them already or not?
I paid them and just got rid of the emails because I thought they would just keep on coming until I paid it. That's one of those situations. Okay, as an owner of an S-Corp considered self-employed or an employee of the corporation, as an owner of the S-Corp, you are an employee of the corporation, and that is the way that you have to go.
You're now, self-employed if you're paying self-employment tax on your earnings, and on an S-Corporation, you are not. You are going to base any unemployment claim based on the salary that you paid over the last 12 months to yourself.
And as a reminder, we are not addressing by hand-raising. We are trying to address everything through the chat feature. So please put your questions in there to keep this thing so that we can keep it as clean as possible. The CARES Act allows for a tenant not to pay rent for the next 120 days. Does the Act provide any guidance for how and when any unpaid rent would be collectible? Can a landlord, IRS, and state IRS can, okay, tax, no, it's kind of got another question popped up. Sorry about that. Unpaid rent would be collectible. Can a landlord explain that all rent and back rent will be due at the end of the 120-day period, no eviction?
So the second half of that, you kind of answered that question. I wanted to make sure it was clarified. People may hear because they want to hear and they talk to their friends and their friends may tell them or whatever that you don't have to pay rent for the next 120 days. That's not true. As we've said, you just can't evict them for the next 120 days. And all rent during that period is still payable. And after on day 121, if they haven't come to terms with you about how and when to pay that back, then they are going to be subject to the normal eviction process as of right now. So. And state and local governments may put additional restrictions on that. It may be more than 120 days, but generally how it works when there's an overlap is that it can't be less than 120 days. So,
and it does stay in that state in there that at that point you would have to give a 30-day notice.
Yeah. So the question is, can the landlord explain? Yeah, I would if I was the landlord, because again, we talked about let's be proactive, let's reach out to the tenants and make sure they understand, A, that yes, we understand that we can't evict you and that we know that things are hard. Let's work something out. What can you pay me now? And when can you pay the balance, right? Then there would be no problem at all, hopefully, as long as they can live up to the agreement, right? But if you're just waiting until day 121 to contact them at all, then you're probably going to have a hard time collecting that rent. So
another very good question came in. As an employer, do I have to pay the payroll taxes now for both IRS and state? And when can I send them? Can I send as much as I can afford?
So that's a pretty complicated question. I'm going to try and answer it simply, right? So first of all, I don't know that California or EDD have come out with any payroll tax relief, right?
Not to my knowledge.
On the federal side, there's a couple different things. There's a number of credits, again, that are designed to reimburse the employer for the mandatory sick leave that the FFCRA imposed, as well as later on, there's an employee retention credit that kicks in that can reimburse them. So those credits are refundable, and they're actively telling you So you can withhold your payroll taxes to the extent that you expect this credit, right? And if the credit you're calculating is more than your payroll tax, they actually just released a form called 7200 that you can send it to them for an advanced refund before you have to file the quarterly return, right? So on top of that, there's also an option to defer paying the employer side of things. So when you have employee payroll taxes, there's two sides. One side is the money you withhold from your employee's paychecks. That is never going away. You have to pay that on time, right? On the other side, although it can be offset by the credits, right? So the other side is the employer tax that they have to pay, their side of the Social Security, Medicare, et cetera, right? And there is a federal option to defer that portion up to pay over the next 2 years if necessary. There's an equivalent one for the self-employed for their equivalent part of their self-employment tax as well. So that's something that we can explore later in the year. So,
but again, these are mostly related to employers that are paying employees while they're not working as well. If the employees are working, there's going to be different caveats that are going to be involved. So this really needs to be addressed on a case-by-case situation.
The employee retention credit is actually made for people that are working. So okay. The others are they're mostly to reimburse the employer for wages paid while they're not working.
Great. Well, this is all constantly a moving target, as I said.
They passed these laws that are enormously complex. Everyone's scrambling to implement them. And, you know, a lot of them we're waiting for guidance for or the specifics of how they're going to work. So,
okay, what form do we use to get the credit for paid or sick leave? And the 7200 is the advance?
7200 is what you send them to get an advance payment. Right, because if you say, I think my payroll taxes this quarter are going to be $5,000, but I'm going to qualify for a $10,000 credit, then you would send that form in now, and you would get the $5,000 now because they want to get the money to you now so you can pay your employees, right? So otherwise, it's all going to be handled, I imagine, on the quarterly tax return 941. The payroll companies are really the ones that are trying to figure out how to implement this now. I know when I went in to run my payroll on ADP yesterday, they prompted me to create a new pay category for the FFCRA items. And others may find it that way, but really you're going to have to ask your payroll processor how the mechanics are going to work, of how you're going to calculate what gets paid when. Because normally when you run a payroll, the payroll processor is going to take the money out of your account on payday. So, and if you need them to not do that, then you need to contact them and figure out what needs to be taken when. So.
There's another question again about when a tenant does not pay for 120 days, does the CARE Act have any source of relief for the landlord in the meantime, particularly if it's a sole source of income? And unfortunately, short of you being able to work an arrangement out with your lender for non-forbearance, that would be about it, because there is nothing that I can find in the CARES Act that's going to give any help to the individual landlords that do not collect rent. Other than the ability to not have to pay as much for their, or have to pay their mortgage without having penalties on that.
So there is the EIDL, that's an option for landlords we mentioned before. One of the characteristics of that is, first of all, the interest rate is fixed at 3.75%, which is pretty cheap, you know. But the other thing is that because it's a disaster loan specifically, it comes with an automatic payment deferment of 1 year. Now, so if you borrow the money today, you wouldn't start paying until April 2021, right? Of course, interest will accrue while you're not paying, but that does give everyone a little bit of breathing room to have cash in their bank now, and even if they don't have income coming in quite yet, to make those payments. So,
yeah. So, I do believe when I was reading in that SBA loans that those also are going to be payment deferred for a few months. I want to say
the PPP. At least six months. Yeah, and actually, the SBA did just release information on the Paycheck Protection Program, which again is an employer's loan that they can take, and if they use that money to pay for rent and utilities and salary costs, including benefits, then they don't have to repay part or all of it, right? So, and that rate is going to be 0.5%. 0.5% is going to be, originally they said not to exceed 4%, and now they're saying it's literally going to be 0.5%. So, and generally a 10-year payback period for anything that's not forgiven. So,
great. Let me see if something pop up. Self-employed, self-proprietor who doesn't pay towards UI or Medicare, would the CARE Act make the self-employed self-provider eligible for UI. Now, first of all, Medicare, you self-employed do pay towards as part of the self-employment tax. The UI, as part of the CARE Act, UI is made available, I believe it's up to 39 weeks for the self-employed that are not working at this time. So you would be eligible. Unfortunately, I can't see how the EDD is caught up to this yet, but I do imagine it would happen shortly. I know I've heard from people that have tried to do it online, have had problems getting their applications through online. That may require you to be making a phone call to get that through.
Good luck. They're calling. They're having the social distancing issues, and so their staff is just like every other business, and it's hard to get through to the EDD on the phone on a good day. So try and do as much as possible through their website and through email as much as you can. So.
Yes. With that said, we also are dealing with the same with the IRS. Their phone lines are pretty much
shut down.
So if you're trying to call the 1-800-829-1040 number, you're not going to get through. They're basically, everybody's encouraging us all to use their websites as much as possible. The good news is we have a little more time to finish things up. But I would like to encourage everybody listening, if you did not already have your return prepared, let's get them done. Let's get them out of the way. And because when our world gets back in check, we are going to be way too busy enjoying some sunshine to be worrying about our taxes. So let's get this, let's get them into us. Let us figure this out and get them to complete.
I'm trying to send a chat and it's not working.
Jamie, if you could send a direct email to me or Russell, then we will take care of it that way.
So we are at a little over an hour, so we're happy to continue answering questions, but I think we've caught up to them. If you have more, I think Alan and I can stay for a little bit longer and continue to answer them, but otherwise we'll be ending it whenever we run out of questions. So.
Okay, there's been one more question here, and we're doing everything we can. If we have your information already, will we have the returns completed by 4:15? We are doing everything we can to complete all returns because we want to keep this thing moving for the reasons I just mentioned, just to get them out of the way. So, yes, we are working.
Well, especially if you have a refund. So I will caveat on my practice. I told my clients, like, hey, if you're expecting a refund and you need that, let us know. We'll put you in the front of the line and get it out for you. If you know that you're going to owe and you're not paying till July 15th anyways, then perhaps you're a little bit less urgent than you might normally be on April 1st, right? So, and in the meantime, you know, I'm continuing to work mostly the same hours I always do during this time of year. But now we have the added distraction of learning about all of these new laws and people coming, for questions. You know, people are hurting and we're trying to help them. You know, that's what we do. So yes, you know, we're still trying. I'm personally still trying to get as many returns out by April 15th as I can, even though it's now not a crucial deadline.
Could I ask a quick question versus emailing it? It's very quick.
Yes.
We had a balance due last year, so that there's no checking or routing number, at least not available from last year's 2018 return. So do the checks come in the mail?
Yes. Let me address that real quick. What will happen is that if you do not have the information already part of the credit to the IRS through a refund that you've requested in the past or a payment made out of your account, because they would have it either way, they will send out a check. The checks will not come out nearly as fast as the other payments will come out, but we are going to be, they are going to be setting up a portal that you can log into on the IRS website to give them the information.
That was announced
just the other day, and we have not got anything further on that.
We don't know when or how it's going to be. I imagine it's not that simple of an undertaking, so it'll be interesting to see how well it's implemented and when.
Now, Russell, we're getting a couple of questions about, are we able to get a copy? How can we get a copy of this?
I'm going to be sending an email out to all of my clients. So you mean most of you found out about this through an email from Alan or myself. And we'll send out an email to that same email list and let everyone know that there's a link through, and we'll put the link in that email. So I think that's the simplest way to make sure everybody gets it, as well as people that may not have been able to attend but might be interested in watching it after the fact. So.
Well, we've had a lot of people that are appreciative of this or do appreciate this. If there's any more last questions, feel free to get them in. Otherwise, thank you for spending an hour or so with us. We were happy that we were able to put something together and hopefully give everybody something to walk away with.
Yes, it's nice to see other faces than my family's.
Oh, come on now, Russell. You love your family.
No, I don't like my family. It's just that that's the only, those are mostly the only faces I've been seeing. So.
Yes. Everybody, please stay healthy, stay safe, keep a safe distance, and remember this is all positive in the end. Let's find some positive out of this, and positive will come our way. Have a great day.